our Radio Catskill. We're going to try that again right here on Radio Catskill. Live from Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is the local edition. And it's definitely live. Coming up on the program, we learn about a facility and a program helping women with substance use recovery in Barrieville. We meet the folks working at New Hope Manor coming up in the second half of the program. And there's history under the river. Underwater explorations have uncovered the remains of structures such as dams and bridges dating all the way back to the 1800s under the Upper Delaware. Talk to Meg McGuire of Delaware Currents coming up. But first, we have some news to get to. And the Electoral College met today to certify the results of the 2024 presidential election. New York Governor Kathy Hochul presided over the proceedings at the state capitol in Albany. But before electors cast their votes, Hochul, a Democrat, took the time to call for an end to the Electoral College.
The Democratic governor oversaw the proceedings where New York's 28 electors officially voted for Kamala Harris. But Hochul says if it were up to her, the Electoral College wouldn't exist.
I strongly believe that the people of New York State and the United States of America should and must have their votes count equally.
The governor wants to amend the Constitution to abolish the Electoral College process, but that's a major long shot. It would require 3/4 of states to go along with it. In Albany, I'm John Campbell for the New York Public News Network.
And in other news from Albany, New York counties now have the option to provide families applying for child care assistance with subsidies while their applications are under review. Governor Kathy Hochul has signed legislation allowing the counties to presume that families are eligible when they apply. So this means that they will be able to get the benefits within a couple of days instead of potentially waiting weeks. Assemblymember Sarah Clark, a Rochester Democrat, is one of the legislation's sponsors.
The eventual goal is once we get more counties stopped in, like Monroe County and all the others, then we can make it a requirement and make it more of a, you know, a full statewide policy.
And there's some counties in New York that already use a form of what's called presumptive eligibility, but now this legislation will make that available for all the counties in this format. And that's the latest news from our news partners at the New York Public News Network. And thank you so much to them right here. Now let's move on to our first story of the evening. And this one comes to us from Delaware Currents. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. Hold on just one moment. We'll be right back.
As the week has gone on and we've come to more and more of these prisons and torture facilities, it's just clear how much of a reckoning the country is going to have to go through now to confront and reconcile with all of the horrors that happened over the past couple decades.
I'm Sabrina Tavernisi. That's today on The Daily from The New York Times.
It's coming up after the local edition. Right now, an underwater expedition in the Upper Delaware Scenic and Recreational River has uncovered remnants of the region's rich history, and among the discoveries that they made are relics of a 19th century dam and the foundations of an old bridge. Radio Catskill's Patricio Rubio delved into these findings with Meg McGuire, co-founder and publisher of Delaware Currents.
The actual relics that were found are probably not really surprising. It's the 19th century remnants of a dam and bridge footings, but they've only explored at this stage about 3.6 linear miles of the upper river with a tool called a magnometer, and about 5.7 linear miles with a side scan sonar. So it's sort of an early days situation. This is all, there is an department of the National Park Service that is, their thing is submerged resources. There's a team, I think, of seven people that are, they go all over wherever there's a Park Service unit to do underwater archaeology. The two people that spoke, this was all a presentation at the Upper Delaware Council. The presentation was by David Morgan and Matt Hanks. These are two archaeologists who work for the National Park Service. I was, quite frankly, surprised. I didn't know that there was even a submerged resources center at the National Park Service. And those two gentlemen talked about how much the Park Service manages, the land that the Park Service manages, is actually underwater. And the figures they gave is somewhere between 3.5 million to 5 million acres. And some of that is, of course, in the Caribbean and other places where the Park Service unit has extensive waterways. But, of course, the interest is in what you can find out about our past from looking at the river systems, or even if the Park Service is there, the sort of the ocean situation. And as I said, this is one of the first times that this has happened for the Delaware, and I think it's going to be the first of several trips, although nothing was mentioned about when they might come back again. But they found these two relics that they were able to identify. But I think what was interesting to them is even in that short distance, there were what they called anomalies, 21 sonar anomalies, the side sonar tool discovered, and 129 magnetic anomalies. And some of what this equipment does is look for iron, because certainly, when we're looking back in time, a lot of man-made objects had an iron components. So even in this short area, there's things that are curious and might be worth investigating. But of course, as I said, it's relatively short, somewhere like around 3 to 6 miles of river that they've actually investigated. So there's a lot more that they could investigate. One of the things that they mentioned as they were talking to the UDC members who were at the meeting said that they thought that it's possible that the members there have, in fact, a deeper understanding of the history of the river in that neck of the woods, and said that their findings could be bringing colds to Newcastle. In other words, of course, that folks at the UDC might already know it. I certainly didn't know that these things were there, although traffic across the Delaware River ever since, especially since the European presence in the Northeast, has been consistent over time, whether you use it for fishing or whether you use it for the transmission of coal or lumber. It's certainly been a well-used river. So the fact that there are some evidence of that use in the past that could be seen if you could see through the water and maybe through the muck is not really surprising.
So as of right now, it's just sonar imaging that had detected anomalies in the water. Has any sort of dive teams have gone down or plan to go down?
No, nothing yet. The sonar pictures are really quite remarkable. You begin to see what they might be. And, of course, some of these blips that they've been concerned about could be things like old tires, nothing really of tremendous historical interest. But it's just you don't know what you might find until you start looking. And this is, at this stage, just from the surface with the equipment that I mentioned to explore what might be there and what might be worth looking more closely at.
And you mentioned in your article that these might be the footings of a dam, a previous dam that was there many, many, many years ago.
The 19th century remnants of a dam and bridge footings. What I know is some of the dam is located near the Lackawaxen, which is, of course, very close to where we have the Lackawaxen Bridge that once carried the canal that took coal from Pennsylvania up to New York. It's a repeat activity, if you like, in this part of the river that has experienced activity for, as I said, as long, certainly in the sense of bridges and dams and whatnot, is very much the result of European presence in the upper river, it is possible that there might be findings of earlier civilizations, which would be absolutely fantastic. But of course, one of the key points that they look for are these iron findings. Those are the ones that tend to indicate some work that was there in the past. Not sure how much further back this work will be able to go. If it's not made of iron, it's likely to decay. And things that are made of wood, although they stay around for a while, they don't necessarily stay around for hundreds of years.
Just amazed that there is a team like this out there scanning the Upper Delaware River for underground anomalies. Can you just go over again the importance of having a team like this to inspect the health of the river?
I don't know whether it's an attempt to keep the river healthy. I think it's really just a question of understanding the river and understanding its role in our history. There's been work obviously done on the canals that brought coal from Pennsylvania to New York, and there's certainly interest in the logging that used to take place, still does, perhaps not to quite the same degree, and those logs would be transported downriver. So it's our own industrial past that ends up getting revealed by this, I think, more than anything. I don't think there's any way that the work that they're doing would necessarily indicate something about the water's quality in the past. That I don't know. That's not something that was discussed. But it seems more an effort to find out what our history is with that, especially with, in this case, the park on the upper river.
It's definitely interesting uncovering the parts of the river that might have been forgotten and, you know, finding these bits and pieces and really putting the puzzle together.
And one of the things that I think is interesting, too, oddly enough, maybe 2 weeks ago, we did another story about diving in the Delaware. This is the Delaware Water Gap National Recreation Area. There's a team of scuba divers that were looking into a train wreck that happened in the Delaware. So it's an interesting thing that I am becoming more aware of, that people who dive like to dive where there's something interesting to look at. So this team of divers that went out into the Delaware towards the end of November are not part of the National Park Service. They're just divers that they don their scuba gear and they go down into the water to look, in this case, as a train wreck. This is something that happened about 50 years ago. I'm reading from the story. The crash happened several miles south of the Delaware Water Gap at a sharp bend in the track. The second and third engines derailed and jumped the track, bringing along another 13 cars of a 58-car train. 50 years ago, this happened. I knew nothing about it. These scuba divers know enough to go in and check it out. So it's apparently what lies beneath is of interest to folks that can explore, either as the archaeologists did from the surface or as the scuba divers did when they actually jump into the river.
You know, just looking at through YouTube, this seems like to be like an explosion of folks, amateur divers looking into rivers for artifacts, people who go diving in rivers or throw magnets over the bridges to find stuff.
That's the other story that we've been covering is the SS United States. It's one of these luxury ocean liners. In fact, it still has the speed record for crossing the Atlantic, but of course, it got superseded by airplanes. And it's been sitting in the Philadelphia boatyard for, I don't know, like 50 years, something like that. And the folks that are gathered to try and preserve it, there's never enough money to really preserve. It's a luxury liner. And now the move is afoot to take that ship away from Philly, bring it down off the coast of Florida, and sink it to be an attractive place for people to dive. Apparently, this idea of things that are underwater that attract the interest of scuba divers is something that this particular county and town is very interested in because that is a boost to their tourist trade. There's lots of other, oddly enough, this past 6 months, there's been a lot of underwater coverage in Delaware Currents for one reason or another.
Yeah, the other story I saw in Delaware Currents is about the divers went to investigate a train wreck in the Delaware River.
That's right. That's exactly right. One of the things that makes Delaware Currents such an interesting project is that the river is, there's always more to uncover and understand about the river.
We're talking to Meg McGuire, co-founder and publisher of Delaware Currents. Meg, thank you so much for talking to me. We'll talk to you again soon. In Liberty, I'm Patricio Robayo for Radio Catskill.
You're listening to The Local Edition, winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
Hi, I'm Kusar Grace KG, host of the Music Emporium. 2 hours of great music right here on Radio Catskill. Sometimes I start out with a little bit of talk concerning things in the world for the week. Then I jump into some tunes that you will enjoy. Jazz, funk, blues, and more. So come and hang out with me. The Music Emporium, Tuesday night, 7 to 9, right here on Radio Catskill.
And that's coming up at 7 o'clock right after the Daily. This is the Local Edition. I'm Jason Dole, and our final story tonight is about New Hope Manor. It's a place of hope and transformation, according to New Hope Manor, and they help women rebuild their lives from the struggles of substance abuse. Sarah Eilbacher, executive director of New Hope Manor, and Lacey Dalrymple, clinical supervisor, spoke to Radio Catskill's Patricio Rubio about their mission, the unique programs they offer, and the incredible impact that they are trying to make in the community.
Our mission is, we are a community. We look at New Hope Manor as not a typical rehab, but a community of people. Our staff are pledged to tend to all of the needs of the women affected by substance use and helping them to reconcile themselves, helping them to reconcile themselves with their community, with themselves, and with their spiritual entity. So basically recreating the whole person that was shattered by the substance.
How long have you been in Barrieville?
The New Hope Manor actually started in 1970 when it was first over at St. Christopher's in Garrison, New York. In 1970, it moved to Poughkeepsie. And then finally here in 1980, we found a home with a former boarding house here in Barrieville, New York. Barrieville, New Hope Manor has been here since 1980.
Wow, great. Lacey, maybe you can answer this one. New Hope Manor focuses on women's, helping women take control of their lives. How is this different from other recovery programs?
I think our program is different in that we are very hands-on. We have multiple groups per day, 5 different group times per day, where the patients get a choice between about 4 different groups per hour. We are very dedicated to having a mix of therapeutic groups, recovery-based groups, fun groups, team building groups. I think that right there and right off the bat makes us different. I know other programs don't have as much structure, very structured program. We look at the thoughts, attitudes, and behaviors because addiction, the drug is the solution. The real problem is things like not loving yourself, stuff you went through in the past. So we look at not just the whole person, but also just we address the thoughts, attitudes, and behaviors because that's what needs to be changed. And it's about becoming your best version of yourself.
If I can piggyback off of that, we are licensed by OCFS. We have a mother infant program here, which makes us very unique and special. New Hope Manor was the first all-female licensed by OASIS Rehabilitation Center. So that makes us unique as well. But back to the mother infant, we have a licensed daycare here on site, which means mothers can come here with their children under the age of 3. Their children attend daycare during the day while the moms can attend treatment services. And the child resides here with mom. We have mother infant rooms set up for children to be in a home-like environment. And we feel that makes us also very special. We're also one of the first substance use facilities to become an 820 program back in 2017. Which basically means we offer more medical, mental health, and individualized services now that we're 820. We have a medical director. We have nursing on site. But we also have social workers here to provide individual and group psychotherapy. And we're finding a lot more of the women coming in are coming in with co-occurring disorders due to several things, especially trauma in their past. And we can individualize that when they get here, especially with our certified staff.
I think really it's great that you have some kind of daycare within the facility just because that could be a barrier for some folks.
We also currently have 4 pregnant women So they will be participating in their treatment here, but they will also go to a local hospital where they'll be giving birth, but then they'll return here with their newborn. They have specific bonding time and before the infant goes into daycare after their shot and everything. So it's a home away from home. It's a beautiful setting here in rural Berryville, and it's quite different from what a lot of our women are used to coming from Long Island, from other major cities all over New York State.
One question I had is, how does a woman gets referred to you? I'm sure it happens in multiple ways. Is it happened because did it come to you directly or some other way that we could tell us that part?
Women come to us in a variety of different ways. There's self-referrals. They hear about us, whether it's through our website, through word of mouth, meeting other people that have been here. We also get through legal entities such as probation or like a drug court will refer a patient here. Hospitals, other programs. Sometimes when a individual completes like a 28 day, they are looking for more intensive treatment and they'll come for the long-term treatment here. Yeah, they're all different. And I'm from all different counties. We come from all over New York. We have patients come from.
Is that just, make it clear, it's not just Sullivan County. It's all across the New York State that folks can come to you.
Yeah.
You mentioned some of the programs or tools that are used to help women on their journey to recovery. Can you go to and tell us what are some of the programs and tools that you do use?
Sure. Well, you know, I'll just start with some of our groups and some of the evidence-based modalities we utilize. For example, we have conflict resolution. We have where we're teaching the women how to solve problems with proper communication. A lot of times when they're coming in, new to recovery, they don't know how to communicate properly, or they were never taught, or they were so wrapped up in their addiction that communication went out the door. Conflict resolution is definitely something that we focus on here. We also provide dialectical behavior therapy along with cognitive behavior therapy, good old motivational interviewing that occurs mostly within our counselors' sessions. Our women each have a counselor and a social worker. So that when they're working with their counselor, most often they're doing more motivational interviewing and CBT, changing their thought processes. Other groups we have an exercise group. We have a walking group. We have codependency group. We have trauma group. We have so many different individualized groups that the women can pick their groups when they come in. For example, if somebody's struggling with anger management, they can sign up for our anger management course. If they want to work on their GED, we have a GED prep course. If they want to work on job skills and interviewing, perhaps they might participate in the job skills class. We have a variety from job skills to more physical, healthy, to more of the thinking process, the trauma group. We have family group looking at children of alcoholics. We have tons.
When you're hearing all the stuff that the programs that you do offer, which is great, do you have any sort of success stories or a moment that you could share with us? Of course, you don't have to give names or anything like that, that you saw a woman come to you and you saw her life transform through your program.
I think there's been a lot of success here that I've seen. I've been here about 7 years, and it's amazing to see women walk through this door and watch the change happen. Watch the click of, hey, I don't have to put chemicals in my body to live a happy life. So that's just the blanket statement, but it's really amazing to see. And we do have a lot of women that keep in touch with us. A lot of women that will come back. We do like a comeback event every year. And so we have
alumni
come back. And it's amazing to see these women where they are at in their lives and how they've been successful and how the accomplishments that they've made.
Also, too, with moms coming in, I can think of a woman who successfully completed our program a couple of months ago who was just recently in touch, still doing well, still living a life of recovery. But she came in not having custody of her child. Long story short, because of the work that she put in here, CPF was involved, but eventually she regained custody of her child, was able to bring him here to treatment with her. And basically that family unit was reunited. That to me says it all. Because somebody's addicted doesn't mean there's no hope. It's getting them usually out of their environment and providing hope for them when they don't have hope for themselves. Right. So the reunifying of family, even if they don't have children, just seeing mom and dad coming to visit, seeing those relationships being repaired makes it all worth it.
And you have it right in your name, New Hope, basically just giving them an open life.
Absolutely.
Yeah. A stigma and substance abuse the stigma around it is still a challenge. And how does New Hope Manor help women overcome the shame and build confidence in their new lives?
I always say knowledge is power. So providing as much education as possible. A lot of times the women don't understand what happens to their brain chemically when they become addicted. Basically, the oldest portion of your brain starts taking over. It's do or die. And so I think education, psychoeducation is very powerful. The more that they know and understand about their addiction, the more likely they are to take that information and use it in a positive manner. Also, we provide orientation for family members, and that's a good forum to help them to understand why Susie might be acting this way, or helping them to understand the why behind the what. Like Lacey was saying before, those behaviors and attitudes, those don't change in a day. It takes time. And I think teaching family members, teaching other support members, the nature of addiction, it's well beyond the drugs. And looking at the human being in front of you, taking the stigma away, this is somebody's mother we're treating. This is somebody's daughter who have been through tremendous trauma. And quite frankly, no wonder they turned to drugs or alcohol to help them cope when they get in here. We're teaching them how to cope with life, because life is not easy and drugs are not the way to go, but they don't understand that until they get in here, nor do family members a lot of time. I think looking at the human in front of you helps to reduce the stigma.
You've been in Berryville for so long. Have you seen the need grow or more folks coming using your recovery program, either pre-pandemic or post-pandemic? Have you seen a growth in unfortunate growth?
Absolutely. Since the pandemic, we got down to 8 patients in 2020, and we've shot back up rather quickly. Definitely seen an increase occurring alongside substance use since the pandemic. Like I said, we're taking a lot more women with co-occurring disorders since that pandemic started in 2020.
Wow, that was amazing. Lacey and Sarah, before we go, is there anything else we have not touched on you want folks to know about?
I think that just letting everybody know that we are here and we have open beds. If you are a family member, if you know somebody or have a family member that's struggling with substance use, please give us a call. We also do have a stabilization track here, and we offer medical services for mild to moderate withdrawal under the guidance of our medical director. So we're here. It's interesting. A lot of people close to us in Sullivan County don't know about us as much as some people do in Long Island. I think I just want people here in Sullivan to know more about New Hope. And if anybody ever wants a tour, they can give us a call.
Yes, exactly. Well, where can folks get more information? You want to give out your website and phone number?
Sure. Go ahead, Lee.
So website is just manor.org. Very simple. And our phone number, 845-557-8353.
All right.
And the last thing I do want to say is we've been talking about the language in our mission and vision statements with our board of directors, and it keeps coming back to we're New Hope Manor. We're going to provide that hope before you hope or believe in yourself. This is their home. We're six to 12 months, even past 12 months. It's a very home-like, warm atmosphere. It's a community of women learning how to love themselves, and the staff are loving them a lot of times before they can love themselves. So that compassion and the relationships that occur here are something very special that you don't see in a 28-day program.
We're talking to Sarah, the executive director for New Hope Manor, and we're talking to Lacey, clinical supervisor, also for New Hope Manor in Berryville, New York. Both of you, thank you so much for talking to me about this. Your organization is great. I didn't know much about your organization, to be honest with you, so I'm really great that I learned more. Because like I said, more folks need to know about this service that we have here, especially the way things are going. So thank you so much, both of you, for talking to me. I do really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Patricio, for that interview. And thank you, listener, for listening. Thank you for being here with me. I've been your host, Jason Dole. This has been the Local Edition. I will be back tomorrow, and we're going to talk to Ruby Rayner, get the latest news, including word that they're going to totally demolish the Skinner's Falls Bridge, detonate it. So I'll have details tomorrow.